What is going on, everybody? Welcome to A Theology of Hustle. I'm your host, Curry Blanford, and today I'm talking to Stephen McNeil. So Stephen is a songwriter, musician, and music teacher who lives just outside of Memphis, and he came on the podcast today to really discuss his latest release called The Art of Repair, which is an awesome album. I definitely recommend you check that out. It's great. But in this episode, we really kind of dig into, you know, what it means to be a musician. And we talk about creativity. We talk about how Stephen has kind of developed his livelihood over the years, like pulling from all these different sources of income and just talking about, you know, what that sort of life is like. I really relate to him in a lot of ways from those perspectives. So it's really cool to sort of just talk about what that life is like and how we go about stuff. He also talks about hymns, because he's done a lot of like writing music to old hymns that didn't originally have music to it. And there's just like such cool stuff in this episode about the intricacies of music and why music really speaks to Stephen in a really important way and how that feeds into his relationship with God. So I think you're really going to love hearing from Stephen. This is a really great episode. Before we get started, I just want to remind you to make sure you're following me on Instagram and Facebook at Theology of Hustle and on Twitter at Curry Blanford. Just keep up to date with everything going on in the podcast. And yeah, I hope you enjoy hearing from Stephen. All right. Well, Stephen, thanks so much for coming on the podcast and making time for me. I'm excited to chat.
Yeah, happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
Love it. Let's just start off and maybe just have you introduce yourself a little bit to everyone.
Sure. Yeah. Well, my name is Stephen McNeil. I was born and raised in the Memphis area my whole life. Been around this area. And I was obsessed with music from a very early age. Started playing music when I was 8 years old, I think. I became a Christian when I was in middle school, and that obviously changed my life in every way. And so I started playing music in church and started writing some music in high school, just like instrumental guitar stuff. And I always wanted to play music, to do music for a living. That was always kind of my obsession. I couldn't imagine anything else. I didn't really know how quite to do that. I didn't know anybody who was in the music industry. I knew people who were band directors, and I knew people who were worship leaders. And I didn't feel like either of those things was what I was supposed to be doing. And so I started college and didn't really know what to do. And I knew I didn't want to become a band director. I saw how hard my band director worked in high school, and I knew that wasn't my thing. And anyway, I always also enjoyed history and teaching and things like that. And so I just decided I'll major in education. I'll become a teacher. It'll be fine. About halfway through my senior year, I realized I love teaching. It's super fun. But all the other stuff that goes along with being a teacher, I didn't want to do. I realized I couldn't do that for the rest of my life and be happy. And but I didn't know what to do. It was too late to change my major at that point. I was on scholarship. I didn't have enough scholarship to pay for a few more years for me to figure things out. I was married by this time, and my wife said, "Well, why don't you just keep doing what you're doing?" And what I started doing in high school was I started teaching music on the weekends, teaching guitar lessons and drums and that sort of thing. And I was working for my church at the time as well. I was a youth minister, and she said, "Why don't you just keep doing that, and we'll figure it out. You know, we'll figure out what you want to do." So I graduated and just kept on teaching lessons and picked up a few more students. And that became my career. I realized that I really loved teaching, and I loved teaching one-on-one and teaching music to people. And I was still writing music. I was in a band after college for a little while, and I wrote music with our lead singer. And I started to realize that writing music was something that I loved to do. I was really not very confident in my voice or anything like that. When I'm writing for somebody else, you know, he could kind of sing all the songs, and it was pretty great. And I kept teaching, and I kept playing music, writing music where I could. I always thought as a kid that like somebody's just going to have to discover me. You know, that's how it happens, you know, in the movies, right? Like you're playing along in the corner somewhere, and somebody who's a bigwig comes along and says, "Hey, that kid's got talent. I'm going to make something of him." That's not how life works generally. And so I didn't know that, but over the years, I just kind of started figuring it out. And I started writing music for my church at some point. Just some songs that felt like we needed to be singing that we weren't singing. But again, I was writing for our worship leader to lead the music. And but over time, I started to grow a little more confident in my own voice and started to find my own voice as a singer and as a songwriter. And so began writing songs for our church, and our church ended up using a lot of the songs that I wrote. And so I made a couple of records with those songs that I wrote for our church. And I sang some of them and had a bunch of my friends come and sing with me. And it just kind of sparked this whole thing where I realized, like, I may not be able to make a living by touring and being some kind of famous flashy guitar player or anything, but I can make a living with music, teaching music and writing music. And I'm one of the elders in my church, and so I do some work there. And so it was kind of an accidental career that I made of it, with the teaching and writing and performing. And I still do all those things. And it's a blessing. And that's kind of where I am. I just put out a new record last week, and it's a more kind of personal sort of thing. It's not it's a different sort of vibe from the church, the congregational records. And so yeah, that's kind of where I am. It's kind of got to where I am.
That's sweet. I love it. I love stories. I love hearing about stories, and your work life reminds me a little bit of mine, where you sort of, it's not like you have this one thing that you do and, like, you know, kind of how everybody pictures the future, where you just kind of like are on this one track and you're doing this one thing. It's like, oh, I do a little of this, I do a little of this, and sometimes this, which is cool, but can be tiring as well, right? I mean, there's a lot of a hustle to, you know, kind of cobbling it together, right?
Yeah.
Can you talk a little bit just about that?
Yeah. Well, I had to learn all of that. I, you know, growing up, the idea was, like, both my parents, you know, worked my whole life and basically had the same job my entire life. My mom changed jobs a couple of times, but my dad worked for the same place for almost 40 years. Neither of them went to college. And so what they wanted for me, and what seemed to be what was taught to me from all parts of society, was that I need to go to college. I need to find something I'm passionate about. I need to pick that job and then do that career until I retire or die or something. I had no idea that there was any other lane open, you know, like I felt like I had to pick one of the few tracks that were the pre-made paths. And so I've said this before to people, but I've always been like a late bloomer, like in figuring things out. And so I figured out over time, like, okay, well, I really like teaching music, and I can build up a clientele of students, and I can teach, but I can also play music. And I had to figure it out. And I learned a lot from other people. I had a friend who did some of the same things, a few years ahead of me. And so I was kind of, you know, picking up a thing or two from him. And honestly, I learned a lot from my little brother. My little brother, there's 11 years between us. And so he's a grown man now. He's a professional musician as well. He has this, like, drive. Like, he is a lot more of a what I would consider to be a hustler than I am. He knew at an early age all he wanted to do was play drums for a living. And so he went and started staking out every local musician and every local gig, meeting people and asking if he could sit in. And, you know, he just kind of like got down and did the dirty work and he figured it out. And that's what he does now. Like, he's a professional musician, and he's had a lot of success, and he's really great. And so I learned a lot from him, honestly, like watching him hit the ground and just go for it really kind of inspired me as well to, if I'm passionate about something, and I feel like it's something that, you know, maybe the Lord has his hand in, well, then to just go for it and to really just to work my hardest at it. I had to figure it out. I've always been one to kind of take the long way around, but I'm loving it so far. Like, it's been wonderful. It really has.
Yeah, that's cool. And I like that. I mean, sometimes, you know, sometimes we do just need to take that longer road, and it's amazing. Like, I don't know. Maybe you could speak to this too, is that you see a lot, that long road teaches you so many things as you like sort of take it, right? Like nothing is wasted on that road, I guess.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I look back sometimes and I'm frustrated that like I didn't like figure things out or like perceive things as well when I was younger, you know, like if I could have just like looked at the situation and assessed it from a logical point of view, then maybe I would have. No, like, you know, like you, the best teacher is experience anyway. And so none of it was wasted. You know, I had times that it seemed like a waste of time, but you know, you make mistakes and you learn like, okay, I'm not going to do that again. I don't want to do that. Or I do like that. Like, you know, I took a risk or I took a chance and tried something new. And I really did like that. I want to do more of that. And
yeah,
it's been kind of a trial and error thing, for sure. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. That's cool. I very much understand that. So can you talk just about, I know you got saved when you were, you know, in middle school and mm-hmm. that's just sort of like, has that always been sort of the, yeah. Like how's your walk with God been through like all of this sort of like figuring out music and what role does music play in that?
Yeah. So yeah, I was in middle school when I became a Christian, and my parents were both believers, but hadn't been in church my whole life. I just wasn't raised around it. But kind of after I came to the Lord, they kind of followed me back in. I'd been going with a friend of mine, and so it's a pretty cool thing to see. And so a lot of my learning music happened in the church, right? Like I'm learning how to play with other people, and I'm learning these songs and you know, learning the great hymns of the faith and some of the not so great hymns of the faith. And you know, it's always kind of been intertwined. It wasn't originally intertwined, but after that point it always was, because I was being taught and mentored by believers who were also playing music and teaching me songs. And even now, like I lead worship sometimes. I fill in for our worship pastor when he's out, and I do some other things, but I've never felt like that was like my primary thing, which was always confusing to me because that was one of the pre-made paths that I could go down. But I never felt like it was the thing that I wanted to do, but I was always passionate about playing for the church, right? Like I always saw that as kind of it's something that I love, but also saw it as kind of a logical thing. Like this is a way that I can serve, and it's a way that it's something I really enjoy. And so I've never, since I was in, so I got saved in sixth grade. I started playing music in church in eighth grade, and I've never stopped. Like it's kind of like, it's always been a part of, like I can count the number of times I have gone on a Sunday without a guitar case in my hand. I can count it over, you know, 20 years, like on two hands. Like it's always been there. Yeah. And it's also been a way that, that I think the Lord has sanctified me, like that, you know, certain songs get inside you, that music has a way of like capturing your mind and your emotions, and a song can get in there and teach you something, and not just like teach you the knowledge of it, but like you can grasp it at a spirit level in a really fast way, in a really meaningful way. That's kind of completely unexpected. A song can kind of come out of nowhere and knock you off your feet and make you realize a truth about God or a truth about yourself. And that has always been the case with me during the time, especially as a teenager and my early 20s, you know, I'm growing up and I'm figuring out what it means to be a Christian in the world, what it means to be a husband, what it means to be kind of my own person. And so there were lots of songs, there was a band in the 90s called Caveman's Call just, you know, those songs changed my life. Caveman's Call and Andrew Peterson. And then a lot of, you know, a lot of the, like I said, the great hymns, you know, that kind of, they stick with you. And so, you know, you're working through things, you're figuring stuff out. And so those words come back to mind. And a lot of times those words are just straight out of scripture. And so the music has always kind of been intertwined with that. And like naturally, my favorite book of the Bible is Psalms. And so, you know, you read through Psalms and you're reading song lyrics for the most part. And so, yeah, it's always I can't disentangle those things in me. For some people, music is something that they enjoy and that it's good, but it's always been tangled up with everything else, with me, with my sanctification, with my work, with my, the way that I like process the world. It's always kind of been like that.
Yeah. That's interesting. So talking about hymns, I mean, you've done some work with hymns, right? Some albums, like some albums involving hymns, right? Can you talk a little bit just like, what does that mean? And how do you kind of, what does that mean?
Yeah. So some of the congregational songs that I've written are just, you know, scripture songs that I wrote on my own. But some of them have been, taking old hymn text and putting new tunes to them. The work of Indelible Grace. I don't know if you're familiar with Indelible Grace. It's I guess kind of a music collective, you could say, started by Kevin Twitt, who's the RUF director at Belmont University in Nashville.
Okay.
And so it's all these songwriters who take centuries old hymn texts that most of them don't have like permanent music attached to them, and they write new music so that they can be sung now, you know? And so there's a lot of great hymns that they've retuned, and that's been a big inspiration to me. So I've done some work with that, finding hymn texts by writers who lived hundreds of years ago and put new music to them. And it's you think, you're looking around the world at the world we live in, right? Like right now we're having a conversation across Lord knows how many miles. And the technology that we have and the pace of life, and you think, I can't have anything in common with people who lived in the 1800s or the 1700s. But like at the basic human level, you read these lyrics and you're like, that's exactly what I'm dealing with. That's exactly what I'm dealing with. And that's been a huge blessing to me and to our church too, like to really dig into these hymns and realize that like, we aren't the smartest or most important people who have ever lived, and while each of us is unique and made in the image of God, and there's no one like any of us, the human experience is very common and not as unique as we think it is. And it's, we can find those common bonds with people, you know, that we know in real life right now, but also with people who've gone in generations before us, and we can learn a lot from them. We can kind of see how they finished their race, how they dealt with their problems, and what the Lord taught them through all of that. And so that's been wonderful to see both in the hymns that we all know, you know, you read about Isaac Watts and John Newton and, Ann Steele and people like that. And you learn from that, but then you find these other writers and you're like, wow, I've never heard of this guy, but this hymn is fantastic. And I don't know, it's like these little, hymn texts to me are kind of little treasures waiting to be found, because, you know, they stopped getting printed in hymnals because they didn't have a popular tune that was attached to them necessarily. And I love that. I love kind of rediscovering things that are already beautiful and already great, and figuring out a way to reuse them.
Yeah. That's really interesting. I think our culture needs to know that we are not the greatest thing ever, right?
Absolutely.
I really do think, like, we think that there was nothing that came before a lot of times that can match like our, you know, ingenuity or like, you know, our level of, and it's like, no, people have lived like this for a long time. We just happen to like have social media making us worse these days.
Right. For sure. Right? Yeah. Yeah. We can broadcast all of our smartness to the world and, people, cause otherwise people wouldn't know how smart we are.
That's exactly
right. Oh, wow. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's good. Let's talk about the creative process a little bit, since, you know, that's such a big part of like your even discovery of your love of the creative process, of the writing process, and that sort of thing. Can you just talk about what that trajectory looked like? And yeah,
sure. I think it started with listening to music. Like I've never been one to just like turn on music and not really pay attention to it, like as background noise. I do turn on music while I'm doing stuff around the house, but I'm in it. Like I've just always been in it. And so I've always, you know, a lot of people memorize song lyrics to their favorite songs, and I do too, but I also memorize like the sounds, you know, like there's I was listening to a Michael Jackson record last week, and there's this one part where there's this unique clap. It just happens on one beat. They come in and they're just clap, and I love it. I memorized the sounds of the records too, like not just the words. So it kind of started with that, and then I just kind of fiddling around. Like, I didn't have much of a social life when I was a teenager, and so I would just sit around on the edge of my bed with my guitar and just kind of I'd be playing a song that I learned, a Led Zeppelin song or a Beatles song or whatever, and then I'd be like, oh, that's a cool chord. And then I would kind of do a little bit of something different with it, and like, oh, what if I did this, and what if I added that, and then it kind of would become my own song. And so, like, through the years, I've kind of like taken apart the songs in my head, like that I was listening to, and then kind of fooling with what I was learning, it kind of became this process. And I didn't really think consciously much about what I was doing. I didn't set out to be a songwriter or anything. It was just fun. Like, I was just having fun. And then over the years, like, I started to really pay attention to the craft of like how people would string together chords and melodies, and how a lyric would work in conjunction with another. And so when I started writing, I was just trying to emulate those people. Like, I was just trying to emulate the people who I thought were doing a good job of it. And that became something I started studying more and more. Like, all the behind the music specials on VH1, you know, Storytellers, MTV Unplugged. Like, I want to hear the stories behind the songs. I want to hear what microphone you used and which amp you used. And I want to hear who popped into the studio that day. Like, all those stories for me brought the music to life even more.
Right.
That I was listening to. And so I would hear that, you know, Tom Petty, you know, when he recorded this song, he and like five other people would just all strum the same thing on the guitar around one mic. And I was like, well, I want to try that. Or I would hear that, you know, so-and-so like took a picture and then wrote about one thing in the picture and then tried to write a whole story out of that one thing. I want to try that. The retuning hymns thing, like, I started hearing about that. Well, I want to try that. Like, I just started kind of trying to emulate those people. And then it really started to become something that I paid attention to. Like, if I heard an interesting name, or I read a story in a book that had an interesting word or premise or whatever, I just kind of kept jotting those things down. And then I would start working through them. And simultaneously, you know, I said that music always kind of been wrapped up in my sanctification. Like, as I'm working through things that the Lord's teaching me, or I'm, you know, grieving or working through a problem, a lot of times that stuff is rolling around in my head and I'm strumming a chord on the guitar. And it helps me to kind of process that. A lot of times when I'm writing the song, it's me trying to figure out what I really think about the situation, right? Or what I really think about a person. And then I write the song, and a lot of times it's like, oh, that's what I mean. That's what I think. That's what I've been trying to nail down all along. It's like kind of taking a chaotic, I always think of it like this, like if we turned off the gravity in the room where I'm sitting, like, everything would just be everywhere. It would just be insane. And when I finish the song, I feel like I've kind of turned the gravity back on and put everything where it belongs. Mm-hmm. Like, I've made sense of what's happening in my head. And sometimes it takes a few songs in a row to get to that point, but it's helpful. Like, it helps me kind of like process things and frame up what's happening in my life, for sure.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I think we all probably need something like that, right? Like, yeah. Help us process life, right?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Life's hard.
Yeah.
So this most recent album is a lot more personal, right? I mean, are you you're doing a lot more of that in this most recent album?
Yeah, it's some of these songs were written kind of concurrently with some of the church music stuff that I was doing, but when I was recording those albums, I was trying to find the songs that fit best together. And so some of the more personal ones didn't. And so this record, it started out with a few kind of personal story songs, songs from other perspectives. I kind of experimented with that, like writing from the perspective of a character or another person. And then, you know, the past couple of years have, I don't know if you knew this, the past couple of years have been pretty hard for most of the world.
I'd heard about that. Yeah.
Right. So, it's this whole thing. And So, you know, dealing with that, processing that, that both the grief of, you know, people dying from this disease, and also just the relational strain I think it's put on a lot of our relationships and the political climate and all that stuff. Like, it's just been complicated, and it was tough for me personally. I had some relationships that were pretty strained through all this, and it was a kind of confusing and disorienting time. And so, as I have been doing, I started writing to try to make sense of it, to figure out where I stood and what I should do. And so I wrote probably 5 or 6 songs around that time. And it kind of, I realized, like, okay, this is the trajectory of what I need to put these songs out now. I feel like they mean something to me, and I feel like it would make a difference if other people heard them. And so a lot of those started to fit with some of the ones that had been kind of on the shelf waiting for a home. So it's personal. And like I said, you know, some of them are stories that aren't my own. And some of them are from other perspectives, but even kind of the more fictional songs show a lot about me and what I've been going through. And so, yeah.
Yeah. That's cool. I mean, it's cool how the music can just speak to the human situation. Like, we've all been through the same situation, and like, I'm sure I've had relationships strained in similar ways that you have, you know, mm-hmm. and to like, be able to process that out and then have somebody else sort of like, work through that processing, right? Is powerful.
It's one of those things, like I said, like, we kind of feel like we're unique in our problems and our pain and our grief. Mm-hmm. And while your particular situation is, of course, your own, like, it's nobody else's, people have been down that road before, and there are other people in the world who feel like you feel, even if, you know, the colors are a little different, you know, even if the situation's a little different. And that's always been a comfort to me, you know, when it comes to other people's art, books and music, and even stories, you know, like, oh, you know, I've never been through that thing, but this one scene in the book, like, I identify with that character. Like, I get that. Or, you know, same thing with songs. Like, it we're all kind of in this together, which is such a cliche thing to say. I get that. It's true in that, like, the human experience is something we all really share. And if we can listen to each other and learn from each other and encourage each other in that way, then that saying isn't empty, and that it's not a cliche. Like, it's true then. I think that's especially true in the church, right? Like, if we're supposed to bear with one another in love, and we're supposed to love each other with the same love that Christ loved us, then we really are trying to, like, link arms and get through things and find peace and count each other as more significant and that sort of thing. So listening to each other's stories and telling our stories to each other, I think, is something that's really, really valuable. It can be an encouragement, even through really, really dark stuff.
Yeah. I think you're right about that. and especially us, because we have the same Savior, and we're trusting and hoping in the same thing, you know, mm-hmm. and like, we need to be reminded of that, more than we need to be taught that, I think.
For sure.
So. Yeah, that's good. Yeah,
definitely.
That's good stuff. So, I mean, the pandemic was hard for a lot of people, but I mean, you were teaching music, right? And like, mm-hmm. I mean, did a lot of your kind of the way you were cobbling this thing together, did a lot of that sort of fall apart during the pandemic, or were you able to maintain?
Yeah, it was crazy. I didn't know what Zoom was in February of 2020. But by mid-March, all of my in-person students, I went strictly to Zoom, and was like that for months. And while I'm super thankful for the technology to be able to still do my job and connect with people in a time when we were all pretty mostly isolated, it was hard just staring at a computer all day. That was tough. And, but, you know, a blessing in disguise, I was able to pick up some students who weren't local to me, you know, and I still have some of those who are kind of around the country. And that was cool. You know, being in the same place with people, even still, is a complicated thing to figure out, you know, like what we're all comfortable with and what is the best thing for each other. And so that was tough to do. And I guess kind of that separation, I would be here kind of in my little teaching studio here, and I would be by myself. And so when a student wouldn't show up on Zoom or whatever, I would have time to write. And so that kind of really influenced, you know, kind of that the I wouldn't call it free time, the different time, I guess.
Sure.
Kind of definitely influenced the way that I was writing and kind of processing things. But yeah, it was a weird time. Things are still weird, but are less weird than they were before.
So. Right. Right. Well, let's talk about teaching, since that's a big part of what you do and something mm-hmm. that you've love. I mean, what is can you just talk about teaching and what that sort of means to you in your life?
Sure. For some reason I enjoy and have found a knack in explaining things to people or helping people discover things.
Okay. Yeah.
And especially with music, even when I was a teenager, like I'd figure out the opening riff to Enter Sandman or something. And I remember being on the phone with a friend of mine and holding the phone against my shoulder and saying, okay, so you got the lowest string on the sixth fret. And like, I'm kind of talking through like, okay, this is how you play that song. This is how you play that song. And we would
over
kind of
phone.
Like over the phone. Yeah. I mean, like, cause you know, in the '90s, like that's what we had.
That's a lot over the phone.
Yeah. But you know, it wasn't like a real guitar lesson. Like we'd just be talking and be like, oh dude, you can totally play this. I'll just like get your guitar and I'll show you. And then when I started trying to teach on the weekends in college, I was really nervous about it. I was like, I'm not smart enough. Like I don't have a degree in music. I can't teach. Right. That's that whole preconceived notion thing. But it became something I was really, really passionate about. Like to be able to, there's something really satisfying personally in figuring out, like articulating, oh, this is why I play this chord this way, or this is why I do this, or how I do this. There's something, you know, satisfying about that. But to see it click in somebody else, to see them get it and be like, oh, and then they start playing and they start getting it. It's just rewarding, and not in the sense that like I feel like I'm more of a person or I'm better than I was before. It's just to kind of see that joy in somebody else is really exciting to see. And you know, I've taught several of my friends to play music, and now they play music, and I've got a friend who leads worship for his church, and other people who play, and like music has just become their thing, right? Like it's not like, oh, I'm taking lessons from Steven. It's I took lessons for a while, but now music is my thing. This is how I do this for myself. And I love that. I love like when people, I think playing music should be fun. And I think that you can find a lot of joy in it. And to see people have fun and to find that joy, whatever that looks like for them, if it's just a hobby or if it becomes something that they want to do as more than a hobby. Like, I love that. Like I love helping people find that. And I've found a similar joy in teaching within the church, right? I'm one of the elders in my church. And so I do some teaching and preaching, and I love it in the same way. That's for the same reasons, you know, teaching in that context. And we've started homeschooling our kids as well. And so that's been a whole new dynamic, because teaching your own kids is a little different than teaching other people's kids. But I love that. I love for myself, I love to teach, and I love to see the results. Like when people are learning and they're passionate about something and they get something or it means something to them. I love that. I love that connection. It's a special connection that you have with people.
Yeah, for sure. No, I definitely agree with that. Can we talk, I mean, you've mentioned like Enter Sandman, you've mentioned like Led Zeppelin and all this, like, can you talk about some of the influences just even outside of the church to your music? Cause I kind of want to nerd out about music a little bit.
Yeah. say no more. I am the biggest nerd, you know, growing up. So you start in life listening to your parents' music, right? And my parents were, we listened to the Beach Boys a lot. And they would just listen to either like an oldie station, like 50s and 60s, like doo-wop pop stuff, or like pop station. Like, it was kind of weird. Like, my parents, nobody in my family until me and my brother were musical at all, as far back as anybody can remember. But my parents like always had music on. And so we got exposed to a lot of music in that way. So, you know, Beach Boys and then like classic rock stuff, Eric Clapton, Boston, you know, James Taylor, the Eagles, a lot of those bands and artists. But then, you know, I started to kind of discover my own thing. When I started playing guitar, I think probably the first band I ever really got into was Queen, right? It was just something like big and bombastic about Queen. And started playing guitar. I got really into Nirvana, right? Because you can just, with a couple of chords, you can play a lot of Nirvana songs, or at least intro, which is all I was I was only concerned about playing the first 20 seconds when I was, you know, middle and high school. And then, you know, from there I discovered like Led Zeppelin. I was really obsessed with Led Zeppelin for a long time. And the Beatles. And then it kind of slowly mellowed as I got older, you know, from the big bombastic, loud rock stuff, which I still have a warm place in my heart for. But I got really into people who could craft songs. You know, Paul Simon, I think, is like the king of songwriting. Mm-hmm. And then I mentioned Heyman's Call. And there's kind of a whole community that grew out of that. You know, people like Andrew Peterson and Sandra McCracken. Kind of the whole, which kind of gave birth to the whole Rabbit Room community and that whole thing.
Yeah.
A lot of those guys. But then also like, I love like the spirit of like improvisation. And, so I love the Grateful Dead, which is weird to talk about. Like, I love hymns and I love the Grateful Dead, but, you know, just kind of that spirit of improvisation and kind of anything can happen. And some nights that means it's a disaster. So I love music like that. And I love jazz. Like, I, you know, people are like, you ask people like, what kind of music do you like? I like a little of everything. I really actually kind of like a little of everything. So I'll go down rabbit holes where for, you know, a month, I'm only going to listen to this. Or like last year, I go through a phase at some point each year where I'm only listening to the Grateful Dead for like a month. And last year it was specifically, I'm going to listen to the Grateful Dead, but only 1980 live recordings from 1980.
Wow.
Why? I don't know. I just go like, I go real deep in that, or like, I'm going to go listen to everything that Jeff Lynne ever produced. So Tom Petty and Paul McCartney and the Traveling Wilburys, or I'm going to listen to, you know, everything that Paul Simon did during this era or whatever. I'm a nerd. I want to know all the details. I want to hear all the connections and, you know, like the meme of the guy like trying to solve a murder and he's got the strings all over the wall connecting the dots. I do that with music. And so I'm constantly listening and discovering new things and revisiting old things and, you know, drawing all the connections. And I don't know, there's something about it that like helps me make sense of the world, and it's comforting to me. And I annoy my brother is the same way. We have different tastes, but we're the same way. So when we get together, we're just like talking music back and forth. And so we'll be sitting at the dinner table with my family, and my wife will be like, okay, can we talk about something else now that we can all be in the conversation, you know? It's constant for me. I'm constantly nerding out about stuff like that.
I love that. The forensics of music. It's a beautiful thing.
Yeah. For sure. For sure. Yeah.
That's cool. Well, Steven, what are the best places to kind of find you and check out the records and all of that?
Yeah. Stuff? Yeah. So the new album's called The Art of Repair, and, it's everywhere digitally, everywhere that you can find music, and a few places you didn't think you could find music, it's there too. So The Art of Repair, my website's, StephenMcNeilMusic.com. It's Stephen with a PH and McNeil with two L's. And that has links to social media. I'm on all the social media. I even recently got into the TikTok.
Did you really?
Apparently. I don't know what I'm doing. And it is a very strange world, but, I'm on TikTok. But I actually post on Instagram and Twitter, Facebook, things like that. So yeah.
Sweet. I love it. Well, are you cool jumping into the final two questions as we kind of wrap up here?
Absolutely.
Okay, so my first question is, what is the strangest job that you have ever had?
Strangest job. Okay. I bagged groceries and I delivered pizzas, and there's all kinds of stories I could tell you about that. I don't know. Maybe the weirdest thing that I've done, I taught for a week-long music camp 6 or 7 years ago. And what it did, there was probably 75 kids that came to this thing. And it was kind of like a rock music camp, but for kids who mostly didn't play instruments. Huh. And so there was I was in charge of the acoustic guitar, breakout or whatever. So it was like acoustic guitar, bass, drums, keys, vocals, and all the kids rotate through all of these classes throughout the day. And so I'm basically just kind of like doing a basic introduction to the instrument, right? This is what do. This is how you get a good sound. And then we'd break for lunch. And then the afternoon, I was assigned a band of like 7 and 8 year olds. So there were probably 6 of these guys. They're like 7 or 8 years old. None of them can play music at all. Like, other than what they just learned and going through each of those classes. And we had to write a song to perform at the end of the week concert. They rented out this cool little venue in Memphis. So at the end of the week, each of these little kid bands perform their songs in front of everybody. And so I'm like, okay. So I had to facilitate this band of 7 and 8 year olds to write a song. So like figure out, okay, why don't you just play that string? Don't touch the string. Just let it ring open and you do that. All right. Now on the drums, can you count to 4? Okay, good. I want you to hit this thing and just keep counting to 4 and don't stop. And so I'm trying to, it was chaos. It was great. Like it was exhausting, but it was chaos. And I'm like, okay, so you can play the drums and you can play the guitar and you do that, but why don't you turn your volume all the way down? And then you go over here, you know? And then there was this one kid who was on vocals. And I was like, okay, well, you hear the music that we're coming up with. Like, what does that make you want to sing about? And he's like, I want to sing about a death trap flying Martian rat who comes down and explodes. And I'm like, go for it, man. And so the lyrics ended up being really metal. It was a really insane experience, but it was super fun, like to the degree that like that camp doesn't happen anymore. And so I kind of got a smaller scale version of the same thing that I do now, but with my students who have some experience on instruments. From that insane experience, I learned that I like facilitating other people playing music, right? Instead of just the one-on-one thing. And So it worked out, but that was an exhausting week for sure.
That sounds wild. That's
wild is awesome. I would have to like bang on a drum or something just to get everybody's attention and say, okay, everybody, let's calm down for a second. Let's be quiet. Let's talk through what we're doing. Let's give my ears a break. You know, it was great though. It was great.
I can't wait to hear the metal albums that a vocalist puts out someday. That's going to be
for
awesome,
sure. You know? Yeah. Oh man. That,
that's cool.
Yeah.
Awesome. Okay. So my final question is, what is one piece of advice you would give to somebody looking to bring God's kingdom more into their work?
I think for me, like the challenge for me, and that I'm always trying to remind myself of, is to pay attention to people, you know, like pay attention to the people around you. Writing songs has been, it's a fun experience, but it can also be like a really self-centered experience. Sure. You know, it can be self-indulgent. In writing music, I've learned that the best songs that I write are ones that I think about other people when I'm writing them. I think about who I would share this song with or who would benefit for this song or what it would mean for this person's story to be told in a song. So I find I write better songs that way. And I found that they mean more to the people that hear them in that way. And then on the teaching side of things, especially the way that I do it, like teaching one-on-one and helping people learn their instruments. It's an interesting dynamic that I never expected, because you kind of become friends in a way. Mm-hmm. You know, for my younger students, it's almost like an uncle role, right? Like, I'm older than them and maybe they have some respect for me, but I'm also not an authority figure. So they don't have the hangups of that. So a lot of my students will open up to me about what's going on in their lives. And if I'm just kind of like, you know, checking the time and just ready to go home and eat dinner, I can miss some of those opportunities, I think, to be there for people. And a lot of times opportunities for the gospel will just present themselves. And if we're paying attention to people, I think if I'm paying attention to people, then I'm being a better friend. I'm being a better teacher. I'm being a better songwriter, and I'm developing relationships with people, you know? And I think that ministry doesn't happen. Real ministry doesn't happen in a void. You got to have relationships with people. You got to know people and relate with them. And that's what Jesus did. That's what the disciples did. Like, they got to know people. And there were moments when they were, you know, speaking to big crowds of people and whatever, but like, they got in there and got to know people. And that's been the most rewarding thing on every level for me, is personal relationships with people, and getting to know them, and in that way, being able to minister to whether it's sharing the gospel or encouraging and lifting up or helping in some way. It all goes back to paying attention to people. And I have my days when I do okay at that. And then I have my days when I'm not, and I kind of have to be brought back down to reality, but that's probably the biggest thing for me.
Yeah. I appreciate that, Stephen. That's good stuff, man. Thanks so much for making time for me and coming on the show.
For sure. Thanks for having me. I enjoyed it.
Well, I hope you enjoyed hearing from Stephen and just kind of talking about his life and how, you know, he's sort of put this whole vocation together. I think it's super interesting stuff. It's really good. I highly recommend you check out his stuff. It's great music, and I think you'll just really enjoy, like, kind of trying something new. It's just, I think it's fun to try new music and new things a lot. So, yeah, I hope you got a lot from this episode. Hit me up, and let's talk about music and stuff and the way that music speaks to you and all of that. This is a great time to go to the bottom of your iTunes app. You can leave a rating and review for me there. That just helps get the word out about the podcast. I greatly appreciate that. And until next time, get out there and hustle.